This is an ABC podcast.
A voluntary program working with female inmates in the Northern Territory halves the rate of recidivism.
But before it was real difficult for myself because I had no help. I was under the influence of alcohol. I was just going in and out of prison.
And the Queenslander on his way to being the first person to swim the English Channel in winter.
Pretty much every day I sit in a chest freezer that I converted at home. It's like my own personal little plunge pool. I set it at about 1-2 degrees. So I sit in that for about half an hour.
I'm Sinead Mangan and this is Australia Wide. But first tonight, we head to Alice Springs, where police have announced that search and rescue officers have discovered a body around the Palmer Valley Station area. That's believed to be that of missing hiker Claire Hockridge. Claire Hockridge, her partner Tamara McBeath-Riley and South Australian man Fu Tran went missing after going for an afternoon trek on Tuesday, November 19th. She's been missing ever since. Her partner was found on Sunday afternoon with her dog near a waterhole, and Fu Tran was found by a pastoralist early yesterday morning. Here's Police Superintendent Pauline Vickery speaking to the media along with Fu Tran and Claire Hockridge's sister Sarah a little earlier today.
I would like to report that we have located the body of a woman today around 38 kilometres south-southeast of Stuart Well, or about 8.5 kilometres from the east of the Stuart Highway. We believe that the person is Claire Hockridge. We have not been able to get a formal identity at this stage. The matter is now before the coroner, and we won't be making any further comment.
I'd just like to say a few words. Thank you to the Northern Territory Police Department for their search and rescue efforts. A big thank you to Ted, who was the landowner out near the cattle farm who found me. He's a battler. He's got like 1,000 head of cattle, and he dropped everything to make sure I was all right. The Alice Springs Hospital, the doctors and nurses, and I just hope that everyone gives us a few days for grieving, and any other words we'll speak up later on.
I'm Sarah Hockridge, and this is my sister Melinda. We are the triplet sisters of Claire. Claire is survived by her children, Tegan and Talia, and a grandchild, as well as her life partner, Tamara. We are all grieving and exhausted from the emotional roller coaster that we've ridden over the past 1.5 weeks. Even though Claire's died in terrible circumstances, we are glad that Tamara and Fu have been found alive and well. And we're extremely grateful to everyone who was involved in that. My parents, brothers, Melinda and I extend our gratitude to the Northern Territory Police for their skillful investigation that allowed the search area to be focused correctly enough to find our missing loved ones. And we're really, really grateful to everyone who has supported us through what has been a tremendously difficult, agonising time. Thank you very much, everyone.
That's Sarah Hockridge speaking to the media earlier this afternoon about the discovery of the body, which is believed to be her sister, Claire.
ABC Australia Wide.
I've had a good life, but I am the new homeless, as are many other well-educated people.
On ABC Radio.
I think the main issue is just that there's just no coverage on the topsoil, and some of these spots are just down to pure clay bottoms that are just, that are feeling like stone, really, and that's as far as it's gone down until there's nothing there more to drag out.
Grazier Jed Wilson from Yalda Down Stations outside of Broken Hill in New South Wales. He describes the recent dust storms as a kick in the guts. A citizen scientist dust watch program in New South Wales has found this year was a record breaker. Across the border in Mildura and Victoria, people got a most visceral experience of this a few weeks ago when a dust storm turned the sky orange during a code red fire risk day. Now, this dust watch program is in its 15th year, and senior scientists scientist with the Department of Environment, Stefan Heidenweiss, says the frequency of dust storms in 2019 is breaking records.
They have certainly become more frequent over the past 2 years, and the last month that I've analysed the data, which is October, has certainly been the dustiest on our record since 2004. To give you an example, Broken Hill had 115 hours of dust. Ivanhoe had almost 230, which is a lot bigger than anything we've ever measured. Even at the height of the last drought in 2008-09, we were not going anywhere near those numbers. The unusual thing this time is actually that the central west and the northwest, so to your east, places like Dubbo, Moree, even Gunnedah, have enough exposed soil to create their own dust storms. Not only in the western part of the state, it's having a serious impact on even the coastal fringe. A lot of the dust storms are making it into Sydney and Newcastle.
Is that something that's happened historically where the dust storm has made it all the way to the coast?
Dust storms can travel very far depending on the weather system. And if we go back 10 years to 2009, the Red Dawn dust storm on the 23rd of September that, you know, covered the entire coast in red dust is probably still in most people's memory. We haven't seen that kind of dust storm this year entirely because we haven't had the wind, but it is certainly possible.
Stefan Heidenweiss speaking to Saskia Mabin in Broken Hill. Now, that Eastern Australian 2009 dust storm, which grounded air traffic, cost New South Wales $290 million. Mr. Heidenweiss said they have sites collecting data in South Australia and Victoria, and they are open to more formal partnerships with other states to collate a bigger picture of what's happening nationally. To get a clearer picture of what's going on with the topsoil of Australia, Geoscience Australia and the Australian National University are using satellite mapping to show Australia at its most bare. Using a mixture of maths and science, the maps strip the Australian landscape back to its least vegetated state. The Australian scientists mapping the state of the topsoil of Australia join me from a studio in Canberra, and it's Dr. Dale Roberts from the National Australian University and Dr. John Wilford, who's from Geoscience Australia. And earlier, I asked them why they were so keen to develop this kind of mapping.
Well, the Australian landscape, we have a very old and ancient landscape. We live in a very dry continent, and the vegetation cover is quite sparse in many semi-arid areas of Australia, and that includes probably about 75% of the continental surface. So we do live in a very sort of arid environment. But this methodology actually strips away a lot of that seasonal greenness. So if you think of in an agricultural landscape where farmers might plant crops, at a given time you might have a lot of grass cover or crop cover, but through the time series that area is harvested, or through drought the soil is exposed and the vegetation is removed, and that's where we actually then capture the surface soil response in this bare earth product, which we can then use to map the soil properties, which we couldn't use before because that vegetation would mask the underlying soil.
So at this point in time, on December 4th, 2019, are we at the driest we've ever been?
So I guess it depends on your particular location in Australia. And I guess the beauty of the product that we've just generated is that we've made the data freely available to anyone internationally, actually. And you can go into this website called nationalmaps.gov.au, and you can pull up our synthetic data set, which is this barest earth data set. And then you can pull up the latest image, and you can compare the two at your particular location to actually see if it is at its barest or not.
Dr. Roberts, your algorithm allowed greater understanding of what was going on in that top layer of the surface. How, in layman's terms, did the maths help get a clearer picture of what was going on?
I guess one of the biggest challenges is that this data set is an enormous data set. So from a practicality perspective, you can't actually develop an algorithm and look at a localized area and tweak your algorithm to work well on that area. You need to develop an algorithm that works without any user input, that's elegant enough and can do the calculations fast enough to actually look through 30 years of imagery across the whole continent of Australia. And do that. We do that on the supercomputer that's located at the Australian National University. And I guess one of the key challenges was developing a kind of elegant mathematical approach to tackling this problem. And I think our approach achieves that, and we get some really nice results from that.
Dr. Wilford, we heard at the start when we were chatting, we heard Jed Wilson describe his property and what's going on there. Does your mapping back up what he is experiencing?
Yes, it does. And what we can do with this product is that we can go back through time and look at the bareness yearly or every five-year period, and we can see how that's changed through time and then relate that to the generation of dust and a deflation of the surface due to wind and other factors such as gully erosion. So the insights we can get through this analysis is that we can see changes throughout the whole time series, and that'll provide information on how we can manage the landscape better going forward.
Dr. Dale Roberts from the Australian National University and Dr. John Wilford from Geoscience Australia, thanks for coming into the studio and talking to Australia Wide.
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Applications are now open for the ABC Regional Storyteller Scholarship. I'm Catherine Marney, ABC's 2019 scholarship recipient. If you're a content maker living with a disability in regional Australia, apply now. You'll get 3 months working with the ABC, developing your content ideas. We'll support you through the process and help you tell the stories that you want to tell. Go to careers@abc.net.au.
Hey there. Yes, you. Try to behave yourself at the in-laws' place. There's only so much family chit-chat you can handle. Am I right? Well, do we have something for you. Wrap up the family visit,
bye,
head home, sink into the couch, hit play on iView. You can thank us later because the ABC has the latest episodes of five-star Australian and international drama series ready to stream. The best summertime streaming is available now on iView.
And right now you're listening to Australia Wide and you're with me, Sinead Mangan. We're going to head to the Northern Territory now, where a new voluntary program working with female inmates has halved the rate of recidivism. Many of the women who find themselves behind bars come with complex issues like drug and alcohol addiction and domestic violence abuse. Since 2015, a voluntary program has been offering specialised pre- and post-release services for these women. The Women of Worth program provides each woman with a case manager who helps with simple things like getting a driver's license to more complicated issues like rehab, domestic violence orders and custody disputes. To date, the programme has supported 120 women back into the community. Lorella Cousins met with the Women of Worth manager, Anika Freeling, and Kerry, who's reintegrating back into the community.
Hi, my name is Kerry Lisa Barra. My mum from Rhode Island, dad from Tui Island. I've been there 3 months.
And the Women of Worth program, how has it helped you?
Something to do for myself while I was in prison, and you know, got to them and I got used to them, and I was attending the sessions every day. I found it real comfortable and found it more easier that I can ask them questions or things that I need help with. The ladies were coming in doing running the sessions. They were respectful.
Women of Worth started in 2015. So we recognise that the number of women in prisons is rising in the Northern Territory. And we're also aware that women are disproportionately more likely to be victims of violence and assault. We realise that there is a need to support women involved in the justice system, particularly women on remand and women serving very short sentences don't necessarily get the support needed to reintegrate into the community. If they go to prison, they lose custody of their children at times, they lose their house. If they're employed, they lose employment. And that is very disruptive to their lives, and they have very little support in prison to prepare them for their upcoming release and set up again.
The lady sitting next to me, Stephanie. Yeah, when I seen her, and I like, she looks deadly, like she's a cool lady. When I got used to her, she found it, she was funny. When I didn't feel like out of place or anything, the lady that was coming in doing programs with us, like Stephanie, and when we need help, when we ask them, they just get everything done for us. We wrote down what do I need help with to get apply for my license, housing, drive safe level course, youth courses, because I like working with children. All those things that we wrote down, she just got it all done for me and tells me, oh, we'll do this next week, and not that she's telling me a lie, but the next week comes, yeah, we're going this way, like she drive me there, like, oh, yeah, she's doing this, oh my God. She's taking me like...
So they have a very strong relationship by the time they get out, and we believe that this relationship of trust was what makes the program successful. And so you've been out for a couple of months now, 3 months now. How is life? How are you?
Well, before it was real difficult for myself because I had no help. Yeah, I was under the influence of alcohol. Being on alcohol was just getting into a lot of trouble, and yeah, I was just going in and out of prison. Yeah, I was doing that until then. I got support that helped me. Proud of myself stepping in, and I don't feel shame or I don't feel hurt or anything. I just brave enough to say things to them, and yeah, if I need help, I just step up and say it.
Lorella Cousins with that story from Darwin, and the aim is to roll out the program in Alice Springs and possibly around the country. Motorbikes are a central part of living in regional Australia, whether being used for farming or just getting outdoors and having fun on the weekend. But one regional Victorian council wants to change that. Jane McNaughton has the story.
In the rolling agricultural hills of South Gippsland in eastern Victoria, the local shire wants to pass laws which restrict the times residents can ride a motorbike. On rural properties, residents wouldn't be allowed to ride motorbikes on Sundays and between 6 at night and 7 in the morning. Brad Snell lives in the region and he says the proposed new laws are oppressive.
The amendments fail to encompass what it means to be as part of this community. They generate an outlaw nature for those who are recreational vehicle users, and it creates a further divide from one end of the community to those who are recreational vehicle users, which is, it's not healthy for young people who are, you know, such a large percentage of the users in the sport. For me, it's more than just an individual pursuit. It's a pursuit for our family. My sister rides, my mother rides, my wife, she's got a motorcycle license, my father's ridden bikes. You know, it's part of our connection to South Gippsland.
You've created a petition. How much support has that petition gained?
It's gained a lot of support, and there's a lot of support, mostly because it's caught a lot of people by surprise, these amendments. I think it clearly shows their lack of ability to connect with the community as a whole. And then producing law after law after law and regulation after regulation. It's not how people want to live in a rural environment.
South Gippsland is fast becoming a popular destination for an escape to the country. Do you think that could be a factor in these amendments, and is that fair?
I've lived in other areas, in other communities as well. And if you're going to move to another community, you have to embrace that community. It's that simple.
South Gippsland dairy farmer Steve Riley says council has botched the consultation process. Along with changes proposed to motorbike use, the new rules would limit the way rubbish is transported to the tip and even the way cars are washed in private driveways.
There's, you know, been no real consultation, and I think that's paramount to be doing this sort of rule change without that. It flabbergasts me that they're actually someone sitting in an office making these rules without talking to anyone first.
What new proposed legislation specifically are you concerned about?
Just some off the top of my head, the recreational vehicle stuff. That's just bizarre. There's people buying lifestyle blocks up here, and they're coming up here for weekends, and that's the weekend that they get to spend time with the kids and teach them how to ride a motorbike or drive a car or, you know, do stuff around their property. And you know, that's just, they're trying to knock that out. And according to these laws, that's what they're proposing to stop.
What else are you concerned about in these documents?
Well, you know, you can have a quick flick through them, but there's washing of vehicles, you know. They don't want people to wash your vehicle on the side of the road. Even down to the point of camping on a, you know, you buy a block up here and you want to camp on it for a weekend, well, you know, there's issues with that. People buy blocks of land to be able to do and bring their kids up and have fun activities and have a weekend away, and you know, you're not allowed to put a caravan or a camp there. Well, that's just crazy. You can't take a bottle of wine and go down and have it on the foreshore somewhere because the liquor law is going to change. So, you know, there's lots of stuff that I don't agree with in this, and again, it's taking a lot of people's freedoms and rights away.
Sarah Prime recently moved to Gippsland from northern Victoria, where she worked in local government. Ms Prime says the added bureaucracy is making residents angry.
It's all permits, 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 and me filling out more paperwork does not make life simpler, and it's hard enough to get an answer out of South Gippsland about standard cat-dog registration, so I'm not quite feeling confident that they've currently got the capacity to handle all this additional administrative work. And further, one of the real things I took out of the community satisfaction survey was that ratepayers wanted to see better value for money and use of their rates, and I'm not sure how telling me how many cows I can and can't have and that I'm not allowed to ride a motorbike around on a Sunday provides any value for anyone.
The South Gippsland Shire was put into administration earlier this year. What's your opinion on that?
Before you start making comments about how someone else's house looks, make sure your own's in order, and when you've got a council that's, well, the elected councillors are no longer present, it gets a little bit hard to take when you're being sort of told how to run things when I think there's a lot of housework that needs to still be done internally within the council.
Jane McNaughton with that story from Gippsland in Victoria.
ABC Australia Wide.
I think it's wonderful. I think everyone should come and see it.
On ABC Radio.
Swimming the English Channel is one thing not many can claim to do. But swimming it in winter, no one can claim to have done that. And there's good reason. It's cold, absolutely freezing cold. Queenslander Sam Penny from the Sunshine Coast is, as I speak to you right now, swimming in the English Channel in an attempt to go for a world first. And before he left for England, he spoke to Rob Blackmore. Here's their conversation.
The water temp's going to be around 10 degrees. The air temp, hopefully, we're going to get over zero. So maybe 2, 3, maybe 4 if I'm lucky. And yeah, imagine trying to spend 11 hours in your Speedos in 4 degrees air temp. That's cold.
Do people try to do it?
This is the first time anyone's attempted to do it. So the first person swam the English Channel way back about 144 years ago. But nobody has ever attempted to swim the English Channel in winter. And I've done a huge amount of cold water acclimatization over the last couple of years, and I've been looking at the figures, and I just think that this swim is possible. There's a good chance I'm not going to make it, but there's also a chance I can make it.
What does not going to make it look like? You in the boat?
Not going to make it. It's going to basically getting pulled out of the water, hypothermia, and just not being able to go on any further. I've got a doctor on our boat, and we've got a lot of safety precautions so that if it does look like I'm really starting to struggle and get into strife, I'm straight out.
What are you wearing?
Just a pair of Speedos, goggles and a swimming cap.
Lathered in that lanolin stuff that
yes,
we know so well from some of the great marathon swimmers.
Yeah, exactly. And so because of the cold air, I'm putting quite a bit of that on my back so that the air doesn't really freeze my back.
Just on the bit that's out of the water?
Yes, on the bit that's out of the water. Yeah.
Because you'll be warmer in the water.
Exactly.
At 10 degrees.
10 degrees. Can you believe that the 10 degree water is going to be the warmer part of the swim as opposed to the air?
And what are you eating to stay warm?
Every half an hour, the guys on the boat throw a bottle at me. Basically, it's a really high sugar content kind of drink, and hopefully they've made it toasty warm.
And are you acclimatising in a chest freezer?
I am. So pretty much every day I sit in a chest freezer that I converted at home. It's like my own personal little plunge pool. I set it at about 1-2 degrees.
So it's water?
It's water, yes.
But then the freezer's on?
And the freezer's on, yeah.
So it goes really cold?
Yeah, 1-2 degrees. I sit in that for about half an hour, and about once or twice a week, I head down to the National Cricket Centre down in Brisbane, and they've got a cold plunge pool there, which is about 10 degrees. Sit in that for about 2-3 hours just to get a bit of a longer stint.
So when's this going to happen, Sam?
Well, basically what we're looking for is a window in the weather. So we really need the winds to die down. At the moment, they're blowing at about 20, 30 knots. We need that down under 14 knots. And if we can get that down for about 24 hours, then we're going. So we really don't know when we're going to swim or when I'm going to swim about sort of 6-8 hours before.
It does sound a bit bonkers. That's Sam Penny from the Sunshine Coast. And I can tell you the conditions were just right today. And Sam is currently making his way across the English Channel. And that's all from the Australia-wide team for today. I'm Sinead Mangan. I hope you have a lovely evening. Cheerio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.